Welcome to another BI for All Talks session. Today we will be talking about the transformation of healthcare through AI. My name is Andres Santana. I'm a business development lead at BI for All, and with me I have Sandra Mateus, who is a health lead in Microsoft Portugal. Sandra, thank you for accepting
thank
our
you
invitation.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So what we've seen on the last years is that IT as general and AI in particular are transforming healthcare, and it is said that we are going to see as much transformations on the next 10 years than we have seen on the previous 100 years. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think there's a lot of things we need to understand to make that affirmation. So the first one is technology is now cheaper than it was before. So that means that we can deal with a lot of data, and that will sustain the AI models that we need for healthcare. But mostly what I think it will transform, and I think COVID had a high impact on this, is that with the pandemic, we saw hospitals and healthcare providers looking to technology as an enabler, as we had never seen before that. So I think we will see that kind of transformation, which is also pushed by the lack of healthcare professionals. So the world.
It's about empowering the healthcare
exactly.
professionals that we have,
and,
right?
And we don't have enough. So what we see here in Portugal, and we always see that on the news, that we don't have enough family doctors or nurses. Yeah. It's not a Portugal problem. It's a world problem. And we need technology to make sure that we focus that the healthcare professionals that we have on doing healthcare and to take advantage of that. So, and I think AI will make that kind of progress. In Microsoft, we look at healthcare in four pillars. The first one is enhancing the patient management and the patient relationship that I have.
You know, so, how do you think now it's all about ChatGPT, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is a clear path on how can we support the relationship with the patient. Right?
There's a lot of technology behind ChatGPT and behind all the OpenAI technology that I think will help this relationship with the patients. So it's not something that is coming up new with the ChatGPT, but I think it's becoming new to people, to common sense. That is that so easy to do? So. Healthcare chatbots have been a reality in US for the COVID, but we are seeing now that everyone can understand what a chatbot is and can easily look at it as a ChatGPT and say, well, there's things that I could do at ChatGPT that I probably could do when I'm going to the triage of a consultation or something like that.
Hospital.
Yeah, of a hospital. So, and there's other technologies that we see with AI. So voice recognition, for example. So we had a project with Nuance, which is now a Microsoft company in Spain, where they use the voice recognition in a contact center to understand if the person calling is more than 65 years old or not. And if it's recognized as being as having more than 65, they will redirect it to a specific path for that older people. So that kind of technology, it's easier now to understand, I think, because in one side, healthcare professionals are seeing how to use it, but also common sense citizens like us and others are seeing, okay, this is much easier than it seems and much simpler to use than it seems in the past.
Yeah, and it seems that the technological barrier of using a chatbot with very specific rules or aimed at a very specific purpose now it's been broken. So you can have a chatbot that can easily understand what you're asking for, that can easily direct you to other paths. So it's no longer something that is very very fixed and very limited.
Yeah, and I think as people, if we understand where it's coming from, it's easier for us to use it, even if it's for healthcare. I don't think we will see in the next year or so AI being used for replacing doctors or even in the next 10 years. And I think we tend to go that way in a conversation. So it's easy for people to say, so do you think that we will no longer need doctors in 10 years? I don't think it's the way. I think doctors and healthcare professionals will be more focused on doing their job than they are now
they will be more empowered on the job. And one thing that and I see it myself on my job is when we have lots of meetings, there's always the need to, okay, I need to take all the notes, I need to get all the things from that we discussed on this conversation. And this can be very easily applied to, let's say, a triage or to a consultation with a general practice doctor, so that you don't have to, the doctor doesn't have to spend like 10 minutes at the end of the visit to write down everything and to get all the details in place. You will just access a transcript of the conversation, and from that moment you can just make the adjustments and speed up the whole process, right?
We all have been in that awkward moment, right? You are in a consultation and the doctor stops talking and then writes down, and we have been there. Yeah. And exactly like you say, so one thing is to make the conversation go into text, and the other is applying AI to that text to say, this is the symptoms, this is the medication that that person is taking, this is not their symptoms, because you replied as not, do you have headaches? You said no, so this is not a symptom. Mm-hmm. And then put those information in the specific areas of the registration of the electronic medical record, for the doctor to look at and to say, I think we need to do more of this, or another exam or another analysis or whatever, but to put that in a more easier way for him to decide.
But the point is, it's always the doctor at the end who is going to be the one publishing the report.
But he gets
all the information there. It's filled in. It has all the data. You just have to confirm, make the small adjustments, but it saves him a lot of time to be transcribing everything. Yeah. Right?
And there's a technology, and there's a couple of startups here in Portugal that are looking at that. The pathways, the healthcare pathways, are very clear. They are approved by national health organizations. So if you have this symptom, this is what you should do. What happens is that the system is so open that doctors each time decide one way. Yep. So if you put this in a system and you go and have all this technology helping you, you will get to the end and have a suggestion. So this is what you need to do next. Just put this person in contact with this this doctor, or go and do this more, another exam or whatever. And have it all documented.
Yeah.
And it's also important for the patients to understand. So he's saying me that the doctor is telling me to go and do this because he had the symptoms and he had this conclusion. Because this is one other thing that I think AI and having an open conversation about this, the healthcare, would help us, is to increase the knowledge that the patients will have from their diseases. Mm-hmm. So one example is, 30 years ago, if you needed to measure your blood pressure, you would go to a pharmacy. And the person working in a pharmacy would let you know, oh, it's high, it's low.
Yeah.
We never knew, right? They were the experts. Now we all have a blood pressure at home, and we all know, oh, this is my normal.
Yeah.
And this is a way to increase our knowledge about our health. So if we share this information in a simple way with the patient, using this kind of technology, is also easier for us to know, why are we doing that treatment? Why are we going on that? And then even if we talk about, for example, chronic patients, it will be easier for them to manage their own disease because they know more about the disease.
And then they know when they get to a specific point or a specific symptom, what path or what action should they take. And this takes us to another interesting topic, and on How is AI enhancing the capabilities of diagnostics for doctors? Because right now we see a lot of use cases, even here at BI for All, where we have been engaging with X-rays, with tomographies, with videos from colonoscopies or endoscopies to detect small things that might escape from a doctor, or to pinpoint very specific things. How do you see especially in terms of imaging? Because it's the one where most use cases have been coming. Yeah. How do you see the impact on diagnostics?
Yeah. So as the technology is becoming more cheaper, for example, an X-rays, in the past we will do two images, and then the doctor would have to look at two images. Now, as it's not that expensive, you are not printing them, you will have 100 images on the same X-ray. So it's becoming human impossible for someone to look at 100 images and find the smallest detail. So that's the big difference. You only had two images now, and you probably remember that we had these big envelopes with the images. We will go to the doctor and we'll look at two images. That was it. Now you have 100 in a CD or in a drive, whatever. And that is becoming human impossible. So what we are seeing is putting technology and artificial intelligence on top of those images. It's making us to go faster on finding those small details that seem not to be okay.
And this is, it's the same story about how the doctor is finding the notes of the consultation. So you find specific spots that doesn't seem okay, and then the doctor has the responsibility to, okay, this one is a false positive. Oh, but this one is interesting. So we need to see if in case of dentals, if this is a bad placement, or if there are some tooth decay, or in terms of fractures, if there is a small fracture or not. So it really speeds up the process for the doctor, right?
And that is one point. The other is, for example, on pulmonary diseases, by doing that regularly, you could also predict when that person is going to have some kind of crisis. If there is a person with some kind of pulmonary disease, you can also find that. So to predict when we'll have a crisis, to work on prevention instead of waiting for that kind of problem to appear. And what we are doing also at Microsoft is taking that specific softwares, imaging softwares, healthcare softwares, and integrating them with our productivity technology, for example. So and Sectra, which is a very known worldwide brand in imaging, it's now integrated with Teams, which means that the person that is using that technology can look at an image and say, I need a second opinion, and click a button and go through Teams and open a meeting or open a chat with another professional that could be on the other side of the corridor or could be another hospital and say, look at me with this image. What do you think? Do you think we have a problem here? And this kind of collaboration enhances a lot the time and the diagnosis or the decision that those doctors need to make. And applying all these technologies, we are saving a lot of time. And I believe we are also diagnosing earlier because the computer is able to see smaller things that human can see. Yeah. And so we are saving and probably starting treatments earlier. Which means that we can be saving some lives as well.
And what we are doing also is we are creating the baseline for the next generation of AI. So we are generating so much information that then the next generation of AI can take it and learn from it and start to predict better and better and better. And this takes us to another point is the way AI can influence not only the diagnosis component, but also how do we treat the patients? And you talked about chronic diseases, and this is a clear point where AI can have an important role. Not only on monitoring any conditions that the person might have, like blood pressure or sugar or something like that, but even adjusting the dosages. Right now, it's very common to see the small diabetes devices that can inject the right amount of insulin. But this is true for so many other diseases, right?
Yes. It is, and we talk a lot about chronic diseases because even in Portugal, but mostly in US, it's estimated that more than 50% have some kind of chronic disease. And so taking that people out of the emergency room is super important for them to manage their, because they go to the emergency room with when they are in a crisis. And when they are in a crisis, it will take longer to treat them than if we anticipate that kind of crisis. So managing the chronic patients is very important. And as you said, so there's a lot of things we can do. And we can go in much further in technology to have those kind of implants. And I think we will see that in the future. I think we will see also the auto tests. It started with COVID. It was something that was not common to see. We never saw this common test that you could see. But I think we will see it more, growing more and more, that kind of tests and that kind of technology. And then managing those chronic patients will, as I said, as you register more information about the patient and more frequently. So here in Portugal, you go to a doctor's appointment, you are a diabetic, for example, you go to a doctor's appointment and then you go back 6 months after. Yeah. And between those 6 months, nothing happened. You have no idea what happened with that patient. If he had a crisis, he will go to the emergency room.
From here to here, and you have exactly. No, you have no idea how.
You have no idea. Yeah. So if they had, and it doesn't have to be a very complex thing. We can start slow with very simple technology to say, let's measure every progress. How do you feel? How was your blood sugar? And go and continuously measure that. We can anticipate crisis. And by providing that information structure to the patient, he will also get to know better about his own, about his own condition. And so he knows that, I eat this at lunch, that's why it's like this, so I cannot eat this at this. So he understands how to manage the disease. And this is the same with the pulmonary diseases, diabetes.
And through contact with doctors can say, look, you are progressing on a certain way. Maybe you need to change the medication or you remember that medication I told you before. Maybe you need to start on that medication because you're getting your levels too high. And then you need to bring them down. So you are treating people in advance and not clustering people on emergency rooms, right?
Exactly. And one other thing is also for remote monitoring of patients that we usually talk about chronic diseases is also taking patients to recover out of the hospital.
Yeah.
So you do a simple surgery and you stay 3-4 days to recover from there. The aim is to say, no, the next day you will be home. But you will be home with this equipment and you will be home being monitored by my outside. Of course, your house has to have conditions. That's not the case. But we need to take people out of the hospitals to make sure that we treat everyone. And we have this big issue in Portugal, but it's not only in Portugal. Other countries have the same, that people waiting for simple surgeries. So you need to make a lot of surgeries and take people to recover at home. Yeah. Being monitored well, when recovering at home, and this can also be done with technology. And as you do it, you can collect all this data, and to understand this person will have a complication or not.
Yeah, and you can say, okay, if your blood pressure is getting too high, or you are feeling pain, or you're feeling nauseous, well. Then probably you need to go to the ER because you need to be seen, or probably we need to reach out for the doctor to see if any extra measure needs to be taken. But that person is not clustering the hospital, is in fact at home, and probably even if it's more comfortable recovering on its own home than in a hospital full of
exactly.
other patients, right?
And interesting is that people feel more cared because they know that every day someone will be looking through that data.
Exactly.
And so even if they don't talk to a doctor or a nurse or a healthcare professional, they know by registering that someone is taking care of me. And that is also a very positive point. There was a project made here in Lisbon about heart surgery, where they took 12 people that had an heart surgery, and they have, the protocol is you need to be in an appointment in 1 month, then in 3 months, then in 6 months, then in 1 year. And 1 year is, if it goes okay, you will be okay after a heart surgery. And what they did is that they gave this person a device where they every day they register and they eliminated those appointments. And there was a simple, very small sample, but at the end, people recovered well, better, and they felt much better sooner because they felt that they that there was a daily care for them.
Yeah, they know that they didn't have the stress of now I have to go to a doctor's appointment. That's where I'm going to realize if this is going well or not.
Yes.
But if you are monitoring on a daily basis, no news is good news, right?
And this is very important because I think we tend to say that when putting technology in healthcare, the healthcare will become more human. And what we see is exactly the opposite, is by putting technology, if you are in a constant monitoring, for example, people feel more care and not the opposite.
Yeah.
So, and that's something that we need to shift also as a society to make sure that we all understand this is not for this is for better care, better healthcare. Yeah.
It's not replacing doctors or treatments, but it's enabling a smaller workforce on treatments to reach out and a larger number of patients,
exactly.
Right? And then this is also another area where AI we tend to not talk about it, but the transformation that the AI does on the productivity of hospitals of professionals, it has a huge impact, right? Because how much time does a nursing station spend deciding about their shifts, about whoever goes to which bed, or if we are going to have enough beds, or if we're going to need to borrow beds or to transfer people to other areas? There is a major opportunity here for improvement because this is being done in so many other. Come on, aviation does it, right?
Exactly.
They assign seats, they transfer seats, they transfer people. It's a smooth process. Why can't this not be smooth in an hospital, right?
Exactly. And there's all the processes we can cooperate with other sectors. And I think one of the challenges is it having that open mind to doing that. We are doing a project with an hospital here in Lisbon regarding the cleaning. The cleaning process. So one of the areas where we saw where they identified that they had a problem to put people to move people from the emergency room to the beds when they are about to stay in the hospital was the cleaning process because they were never knew if they could send the person to that specific room because they didn't knew if it was clean or not.
Yeah.
And what we understand is that the cleaning teams, they do it by routes. So they start on one floor, they do the whole floor, then they go back and they do the floor. And that doesn't mean the routes are aligned with what you need. So there were cases where you have beds to clean with people in the emergency room that needed to be admitted.
And they were cleaning beds other way.
So we did a simple app on Teams share with all people in the hospital and the cleaning teams that says, this is what I need. This is my request. I need a bed on this, I need a bed on this, I need this, I need this. And what happened is that the cleaning teams started working by priority instead of a fixed route.
Yeah.
And that is increasing a lot, actually is decreasing a lot the time people stay in the emergency room, which means that I can admit more people in the emergency room that goes then to the room. So. And this seems, when I explain this, this seems like a very simple process, but you need to have a common platform where they can all talk in real time, because and when it's clean, they go there and do check,
and
it's
and people,
done.
And people need to be aware that such a simple thing as prioritizing a request can have a huge impact
It's not like you need a huge digital capability to do that, but you need to have people on board with that solution. You need to have a simple platform that people can enter, protected, of course, and everything. So this is being done with our technology, a power platform inside Teams, that it's easier for anyone to to access. And this is, those small processes are increasing a lot the time that people have available to treat other patients. And we need to go and find, not to go and find, because if you go into a hospital or a healthcare facility, they almost there, everyone knows where are the bottlenecks. They just don't know how to solve them. And most of the time they cannot match that problem with the technology. And that's where Microsoft and BI for All and other companies need to get together and say, this is where. And this will increase a lot the productivity, of course. And there's a lot of things that we are seeing coming. Using AI to organize shifts, beds, to organize even the surgery list to organize, let me pick this one and then this one.
Even the supply chain of the hospital itself. So you know how many surgeries you're going to have, you know how many surgical kits you need, you know how much does needs to come from the warehouse, you know how much you have on the warehouse, so you might have to purchase or order something. So this is also a process that you don't have to have a team just working on that. It's something that can easily be automated because we are doing it for many other industries. The supply chains are fully or nearly fully automated. So this is something that can be very easily done on a hospital or clinical environment.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying. So we need to also have decision makers to look at other sectors and to see that there's not that big difference and to say, if they are doing that, why can't I do that in my hospital? And I think COVID brought that up. So most of them are looking and say, okay, this was not so difficult to do. And there's other things that we need to change. In some countries, we need to change the financing model of hospitals to make sure that technology also increases the revenue, exactly. Even if it's come from public sector or private companies, it doesn't matter, but increases revenue so that they can have money to spend on one side to earn money on the other. And for example, in Portugal, as we look at healthcare as a social service or a public service, we usually don't get that view of revenue and expense.
It's always a cost and never an investment.
It's always a cost. So, and I think we also need to change that way of looking at the way that healthcare is managed to make sure that we have the money to invest in those kinds of technology.
Yeah. And one last topic before I finished. We talked this a lot through our conversation, but a big question that we always get on this topic is, how do we make AI responsible? So how do we make sure that AI is not making a bad decision, that is giving us the right amount of information. So would you trust your health to a computer? And I hear this a lot, and I think the major takeaway that we need to have from this is that no one is replacing a doctor or a healthcare professional, right? We are just empowering and making sure that they can reach out many more patients in a more efficient way than spending their time on tasks, on administrative tasks or on menial tasks that they can be done any other way, even automated or taken away from them, right?
And I think there's two visions of this. So first one, as a Microsoft professional, I'm aware that Microsoft has a responsible AI office. So every project that we do in AI needs to go through that office, needs to be approved, validated, and needs to go through our principles of AI. And there's a lot of things that we do on our technology that need to be clear for others that we are doing. So for example, we are now launching Copilot inside Microsoft Office. And one of the things that I see myself explaining to customer is, this will work if you have everything inside your technology, because this will be AI, but will be used inside your tenant, inside your technology. It's not going to pick other customers, so it's only yours. So it's technology with your information. And the customers need to have this very clear. So where is it coming? So using our browser with OpenAI, We made a difference when comparing to ChatGPT. If you go there and look for it, when it gives you an answer, you see the sources. And this is very important. So you're getting information, but you know where it's coming from.
Exactly.
So to be very transparent on the way this AI is coming back to you. So this is how I see Microsoft dealing with this. And I think tech companies need to lead the way, but I think this should be a balance between the tech companies, the market, and also the lawmakers that need to go faster to make sure that they are regulating something that still exists. Because if they go later, they will tend to regulate something that has gone already.
There's going to be loopholes for sure.
But as a citizen, and I think this is, as a citizen and as a professional, and I think this is very important also for doctors and for nurses and healthcare professionals, go deep, ask questions. Because I don't think people do it. So where this is coming from, right? So you were saying, we were talking about that example where there is a transcript of our conversation, right? That goes and say, so explain me how this is coming from. And for example, when using Nuance Technology, which is our partner, they can explain you exactly what were the models that they used to train it and why is it coming that way. So I think before making a judgment, I think as a citizen, as a professional, we need to make those questions. So explain me, where is this coming from? Because it's easier for us to trust something that we understand.
Yeah, need to know that we know where is
but
it coming
it's from. It's easy for me that work at Microsoft and for you that work in technology to understand where it's coming from. But for the common citizen or for a doctor that is being a doctor for 30 years, it's not easy to understand. So make those questions, ask people how this is coming from, learn from
it. It's not about blind faith in something that you are saying, but you have the source, you have the basics to.
I heard the other day about ChatGPT that someone was saying this is actually got blocked in a few countries and so on, so this is scaring. And I heard someone say, no, scaring it was before when it was hidden in some kind of company no one ever heard of.
Exactly.
Now it's open, we know it's there, and we all know it's there. So it's easier for us to go and understand how it works and ask questions and to be or not comfortable with it. But it's easier to make those questions than to not know that it existed. And one day it will come out and it seems like it was a different world, right?
Yeah. It's just an adaptation phase, right? So it's not going to take anyone's job. Your job is going to incorporate ChatGPT sooner or later. Yeah. You need to rely on it for something. And that's my vision for AI in healthcare. It will never replace the healthcare professional, but the healthcare professional will have to incorporate it somewhere in his activities on the next years.
One of the examples that I saw most videos that were around ChatGPT was in US. For get the approval to do a specific treatment or a surgery, you need to have an approval from the insurance company. And doctors will spend a lot of time writing reports to say, so I've seen this, this is my diagnosis, this is the way my way of treatment, so I need your approval to do this. And then they will go and research for papers to make sure that they had the arguments to be approved by the insurance company. And there's a video circulating that explains and that does this, so there's a doctor saying, I need to write this to this insurance explaining this. And it builds a complete letter explaining why do you need that.
The doctor having to search
the references and the studies. And when you think about it, it makes total sense because the information was there, right? It doesn't make sense for each case the doctor to write it down.
To write down everything. Yeah.
Yeah, and what I would think this will do is when insurance companies start receiving those letters, they will start to say, okay, so probably we shouldn't ask this to the doctors. We should have the treatment and then validate it inside.
We should validate ourselves.
Exactly, with AI, if this makes sense or not. So, but we need to make that change. And I think being curious and asking questions is part of the solution.
Yeah.
It's not saying I don't know anything about it and I don't want to know.
And now I need to put a blind faith on something
exactly.
that they're saying to me. Yeah, I think that's the point. Sandra, thank you very much for your visit here at BI for All office, and we'll see you again on the next BI for All Talks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.